265. At the risk of annoying innocent ears, I propose the following. Egoism belongs to the nature of the noble soul. I mean that unshakable faith that to a being such as we are, other beings must be subordinate by nature and have to sacrifice themselves. The noble soul takes this fact of its egoism without any question mark, and without the feeling that there is anything harsh, compelled, or arbitrary in it, much more as something that may be established in the fundamental law of things. If he sought out a name for this, he would say, it is justice itself. In some circumstances which make him hesitate at first, he admits that there are those with rights equal to his own. As soon as he has cleared up this question of rank, he moves among these equals who have the same rights as his, with the same confident modesty and sophisticated reverence which he has in his dealings with himself, in accordance with an inborn heavenly mechanism which all the stars understand. It is one more part of his egoism, this sophistication and self-restraint in his relations with his equals. Every star is such an egoist. It honours itself in them and in the rights which it concedes to them. It has no doubt that the exchange of respect and rights, as the essential quality of all interactions, also belongs to the natural condition of things. The noble soul gives as it takes, out of the passionate and sensitive instinct for repayment which lies deep within it. The idea favour has no sense and agreeable fragrance inter pares among equals. There may be a sublime manner of allowing presents from above to wash over one, as it were, and drinking them up thirstily like water drops, but for this art and gesture the noble soul has no skill. Here its egoism hinders it. In general, it is not happy to look up above. Instead, it looks either directly forward, horizontally and slowly, or down. It knows that it is on a height. 266. We can only truly respect highly the man who is not seeking himself. Goethe to Rat Schlosser. 267. There is a saying among the Chinese that mothers even teach their children, Seo Shin, make your heart small. This is the essential and basic tendency of late civilizations. I have no doubt that an ancient Greek would recognize this self-diminution in us contemporary Europeans as well, and for that reason alone we would already go against his taste. 268. Ultimately, what does it mean to be ignoble? Words are sound signals for ideas, but ideas are more or less firm image signs for sensations which return frequently and occur together, for groups of sensations. To understand each other, it is not yet sufficient that people use the same words. They must use the same words also for the same form of inner experiences. Ultimately, they must hold their experience in common with each other. That's why human beings belonging to a single people understand each other better among themselves than associations of different peoples, even when they themselves use the same language. Or rather, when human beings have lived together for a long time under similar conditions, climate, soil, danger, needs, work, then something arises out of that which understands itself. A people. In all souls, a similar number of frequently repeating experiences have won the upper hand over those which come more rarely. People understand each other on the basis of the former, quickly and with ever-increasing speed. The history of language is the history of a process of abbreviation. On the basis of this rapid understanding, people bind with one another closely and with ever-increasing closeness. The greater the danger, the greater the need quickly and easily to come to agreement over what needs to be done. Not to misunderstand each other when in danger is what people simply cannot do without in their interactions. With every friendship or love affair, people still make this test. Nothing of that sort lasts as soon as people reach the point where, with the same words, one of the two feels, means, senses, wishes, or fears something different from the other one. The fear of the eternal misunderstanding. That is the benevolent genius which so often prevents people of different sexes from over-hasty unions, to which their senses and hearts urge them. A not Schopenhauerish genius of the species. Which groups of sensations within the soul wake up most rapidly, seize the word, give the order? That decides about the whole rank ordering of its values. That finally determines its tables of goods. The assessment of value in a man reveals something about the structure of his soul and where it looks for its conditions of life, its essential needs. Now, assume that need has always brought together only such people as could indicate with similar signs, similar needs, similar experiences. Then it would generally turn out that the easy ability to communicate need, that is, in the last analysis, familiarity with only average and common experiences, must have been the most powerful of all the forces which have so far determined things among human beings. People who were more similar and more ordinary were, and always have been, at an advantage. The more exceptional, more refined, rarer, and more difficult to understand are easily isolated. In their isolation they are subject to accidents and rarely propagate themselves. People have to summon up huge counterforces to cross this natural, all too natural, progressus in simile, advance into similarity. The further training of human beings into what's similar, ordinary, average, herd-like, into what's common.